Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Bees podcast for August the 19th, 2022. This is episode number 124. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept, production confirmation for the Polestar 6 convertible, and the Lincoln Model L100 has been revealed. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside of Bees forum moderator and Inside of Bees editor. Joining us today is the unimpeachable Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the megastar Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And hopefully the jovial Mr. Kyle Connor will join us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels, including Out of Spec Reviews, which has just passed 100,000 subscribers, for which they received their special plaque from YouTube. So big congrats to the Out of Spec team. And okay, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to this channel, Inside EV's YouTube channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody.
Hey.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good morning.
All right. So let's kick this thing off with news. Hopefully Kyle will join us. I'm not sure where he is this morning, but hopefully he'll be here soon. Tom, you're in on the border of Canada on vacation somewhere in the wilds of New York State. Yes.
Yeah, I'm up on Wellesley Island on the St. Lawrence River, looking out the window at Canada. We're actually going over to Canada for lunch today, and I've been on vacation all week. So if I don't know every little detail about every little story we talk about today, forgive me, because I've been kind of decompressing and not looking online and my emails and all that stuff for a little bit. So I'll try to keep up with you guys today.
Sweet. All right. How you doing over there, Martin? How's the UK?
Yeah, good. As I've been texting you this week, the fresh hell that is what my kid is bringing home from nursery each week means that we're always ill with something like coughs or colds, but this week really bad. Couldn't do my podcast. I can talk today, and I haven't been able to talk all week, so my wife has been delighted.
All right.
But I'm feeling a little better. I may not say as much as usual. So, Kyle, come and join the show. Come on, get on.
Out of whom's
Pete, I noticed Pete Bremmy just commented, spoiler alert, Tom is driving an ice-powered boat this week. I am. I'm at my wife's family's house, and I'm actually driving up and down the St. Lawrence River in a 1959 Chris-Craft with the original Corvette engine. That's been totally restored, and the thing is mint. It is gorgeous. Just cruising up and down the St. Lawrence River up here. There's a lot of old wooden boats in this area up here, and we're riding in a fully restored mint 59 Chris-Craft, and it is awesome. So I'm burning some gasoline this week, guys. Sorry.
Okay. Are you on an island? You say?
Yeah, Wellesley Island.
Okay, but what's the little town? So when you go to Canada, what's the little town that you go to?
I'm not even sure where we're going. Okay. I'm following the wife. I know she has a couple of places picked out, and I hope we have all of our vaccination cards and IDs ready, because from what I understand, they don't make it easy getting over the border. As soon as the podcast's over, that's where we're heading. I'm not honestly, I don't even know where we're going, but I know we're going to Canada.
All right. So let's get this thing off going here. Let's start with some news. All right. So the big news of the week has to be the debut of the Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept. It's a two-door muscle car with lots of Dodge Charger heritage in its DNA. unveiled at the M1 in Pontiac, Michigan during the last day of the three-day Dodge Speed Week event series. So they have three-day weeks at Dodge, I guess. This electric charger boasts an 800-volt all-wheel drive Banshee powertrain. They say makes it faster than the SRT Hellcat. So Banshees are faster than Hellcats, apparently. So how much faster? Dodge didn't disclose, just like it didn't disclose any numbers around the power or the battery size. It did say, however, that it added the Daytona tag to the name of this car because it's the that car, the Daytona, was the first to break 200 miles on a NASCAR track back around, I think it's 1970. Don't quote me on that. But around that area. So they don't actually say it. It will do over 200 miles an hour, but that is the implication here for sure. So I want to hear what you guys think about these styling and features, but let me start by pointing out what I think is the most like impactful design feature, and that's the R-wing, what they call them, the R, like the letter R wing. So instead of a wing out on the back, the charger uses the leading edge of the front end as a wing. So air passes through this like open slot. You can see down your screen here if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook. Instead of a wing in the back, the charger uses the leading edge of the front end as a wing. So air passes through the open slot where the traditional grill might be and comes up over the hood, adding some downforce, like the hood is curved down into below the front of the grill. So as we mentioned, this is a concept, but there's little doubt Dodge will present something very similar to the production car arriving in 2024. So how about we start with our thoughts about the design and then hear what you think about some of the more unique features that Dodge has come up with to make this their vehicle, their electric muscle car, like stand out from the crowd. So Tom, I'd like to hear your thoughts about the design, but also, do you think the production version will be a coupe like this concept like the current Dodge Challenger, or will it have like four doors like the current Charger that sells about 40 or 50% better?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine they're going to keep it a coupe. I mean, why would they show off something that looks this sexy and then, you know, change it that drastically? They'll be setting themselves up for a lot of disappointment, you know?
Right.
I mean, I hope they keep it a coupe.
Some people think coupes look better and, you know, they like might lack some of the utility of a four-door. But if you look at that rear window, it still looks like it could be like a four-door, you know? They could keep that same roof line and like put a door in there. I just worry. It'd be nice. I like coupes, so I like to see it stay a coupe. But I just have this feeling that it might not.
As it is now, it's drop dead gorgeous in my opinion. Yeah. I mean, they nailed the styling to me. That looks awesome. I always loved the Challengers, you know, and this looks, you know, along that line more so than the Charger, the latest iteration of the Charger that they brought out. And I mean, I think this thing looks awesome. That front end is, I mean, they nailed it. They couldn't have done better in my opinion. I think it looks awesome.
Right on.
Look at that. That is awesome.
I'd like to see it in person, but I love that, like the ring around the whole front end, but that's actually mostly a hole. So, and they brought back the what they call the Fratzog symbol. That's like a three-pointed star. I remember seeing that on like the hubcaps on my dad's cars because I used to change the tires on them a lot. So it had this little tiny round hubcaps that just go over the center, and they'd always have that little Fratzog, little Dodge symbol on them. So it's kind of neat that, and it doesn't really mean anything, and they just made up the word Fratzog for it, but it's kind of a weird word, and it's kind of a neat looking symbol actually, and it's interesting that they brought it back for this. The interior looks pretty sweet.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, you know, from what we see so far, styling wise, I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, Martin, what do you think about this? This is not really like a in the UK vein of styling at all, I don't think, right?
Well, we don't have the brand over here, but we would understand limited sales if it did go on sale. And what's great is that we're at a stage now where we can talk about these cars with a degree of certainty that they're going to arrive. And I think that's happened in EV world a little bit, because things like Hyundai with the Arniq 5, with their, what's it called, the Project 45? What was the earlier name they gave it as well? You know, it looked kind of crazy. And then it arrived and it's like, oh, they've made the same car, but they've just taken off some of the concept car bits. Whereas in ICE world, you know, you have concept cars. And this does happen in EV world, but concept cars have previously been a chance for designers to indicate where the brand might be in 5 or 8 years' time. Whereas actually we've seen in EV world, concepts arrive really similar to how they're leaked. And in fact, this was leaked 2 years ago during COVID, when the designer of the vehicle said, hey, we're all working remotely and we're working from home, and this is what we're working on. And no one paid any attention, because at the time it was a sketch. If only we'd have realized we'd have had a 2 year head start on this. It's great that they're going to, I think they will make something similar to this. But what I'm really interested in actually is also our listeners and our viewers is how analogous it is to what's existing at the minute. So I guess at one end of the scale, you've got pure kind of EV craziness, like the EV1, you know, something designed that is slippery as hell, looks crazy, no one likes the way it looks unless you're really, really into it. And yet you've got this, which if you didn't know it was electric, would just be another muscle car. So yeah, curious to know what you think about that on that line of something that looks wild and EV-ish to the other end of the line. It's just, I hate to say normal, because EVs are the new normal, but it just looks like any other muscle car, and it just happens to be powered by electric. I think that's a good thing, by the way. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think it'll bring a lot of people, you know, traditional Charger and Challenger fans, muscle car fans, you know, to the electric fold. I think in a good way, like it'll attract them in without, you know, a lot of people feel like they're being forced to buy a lot of electric vehicles. I see that comment on some things online sometimes, and so it's great if you have product that just like brings them in without, because you don't want people to feel like they're being forced. You know, people can still buy gas cars for a while, but you know they're going to go away, and you really want to have desirable products that people really want to have and help them make the shift. And I think once people drive a little bit, you know, they tend to get it and really enjoy driving electric. But this might be just like the kind of product that they need to pull in some of the less not conservative politically, but just conservative automotively people. Yeah.
So if I play a tweet, I don't know if I've got sound turned on my screen share. So let me know if you hear this.
Okay.
Are you getting that noise?
Yep.
You hear, yes. The lady say, oh my, okay, right, let me oh make God. That a little bit bigger, and let's have a listen to the noise that they've given it from the fake speakers.
Oh my God. Bro, that is amazing. That is sick. What?
So we notice there, it makes a big sound.
Hold on, there's more fake revving.
Okay.
The clear roof and everything, that's insane.
Oh, they like the glass roof, that's cool.
So what I'm not sure about is, I mean, obviously you'd be able to turn the sound, well, hopefully you can turn that sound off.
Hopefully.
But why? This is what I don't understand about why the designers would spend more than a millisecond in this discussion in, you know, when they're having their conference call about it. Why give it a rumble of a V8? And why have, there's obviously like a knob or something, because obviously you can't blip the throttle because you'll be crashing into people. So there's obviously like a thing or a knob or something that you can turn to blip the throttle. And that, I don't get that bit. I don't get why you would buy an EV and then recreate combustion. And I'll tell you why, because I think there's people like us who drive electric cars already and who watch this show, some own them, who are interested in researching, and it's gone from early adopters to the early mainstream. And there'll be people in 15 years time who never want to drive an electric car. And so it seems like they've made an EV but don't know who it's for, because they've given it this feature that appeals to people who in 15 years' time will still want to blip the throttle and rev an engine. Whereas if you want to buy an electric car, sure, it has to make a noise for pedestrian safety, etc. But giving it like this thing where you go, rum, rum, because let's face it, noise in a combustion car is wasted energy. Noise only exists because your bonnet gets hot because it's energy that's not going into, kinetic movement. So we burn a fuel, it's hot and it's noisy, and also you move somewhere. Whereas in electric cars, you don't need to waste energy creating noise, and there is some heat, to get rid of. Like, that's my point. It seems weird, but I don't want to be on a downer because I think the car looks amazing,
right?
And I'm so pleased they're doing it.
Well, it's a weird thing. So this thing that's called the Fratzonic Chambered Exhaust, and
in other words, a speaker.
Well, this is how they describe it. They say it pushes its one-of-a-kind performance sound through an amplifier and tuning chamber located at the rear of the vehicle, produces like 126 decibels, which is like a regular Hellcat, I guess, SRT kind of level of volume. And yeah, so I guess there's a speaker somewhere, and then it goes to a tuning chamber, I guess, to make it sound. I don't know. I personally don't like it, and I would probably use it once if I had this car. But some people, you still see a lot of people, saying, why can't they make, electric cars have sounds? And people like the idea of having sound, which I think they would get over once they drove electric for a while. But it's just one of those like small hurdles that some people, maybe a small percentage of the population, I don't know, but anyway, so this is for them. But man, I hope there's an off switch.
There's got to be an off switch. And I honestly blame it on two words: focus groups. Ford and everybody, does this extensive. Ford, Dodge, and everybody else have been doing extensive focus group research for electrification. I've been involved in a number of them for a number of different automakers. And, they're asking their core customers, what do you want in an EV? If you were to buy an electric vehicle, what would you like to see in it? And overwhelmingly, the people that are involved in the performance car, segment are consistently complaining about the noise. They know they're fast. They know they're powerful. They love the instant torque. But everybody is telling the manufacturers, I won't buy one unless, I hear the power. So that's why they're doing this. And there'll be an off switch. I'm certain of that. I think this is something that's going to be an appendage that we see in the, for the next maybe 7 or 8 years on a lot of new cars. But then it's going to go away because, as Dominic said, a lot of the owners that get the cars are going to initially think that they want that, but then they're going to just stop turning it on because they're going to be like, I don't need that. It's the performance and the feel of it is really what I want the car for. So I think many people that think they would only want a muscle car if it sounded like a muscle car will change their tone after they've owned it for a little while.
I love those wheels, by the way. Those are kind of unique. I don't know if I've ever seen wheels like that, this on like a production or a concept vehicle, with that ring around the outside and the inset in the middle. Oops. Anyway,
they're also, if I can jump in again, this topic of being analogous to combustion is it's a single speed transmission, which they said they will use to recreate the feeling of a multi-shift box so that the car revs and lurches when it changes gear. But why?
Right. It's a vestigial, I don't know. So
why would you use a single speed reduction gearbox, which all EVs have, and like a Porsche Taycan has two speed, and you can feel it in the Taycan. But why would you amplify that into four or five different rev ranges that make the car jump, as in you've just changed gear, the revs have gone down, now you're going to climb up through the gearbox.
It's got to make it slower, right?
Because gearboxes exist because of the revolutions of a combustion engine and torque, and you can have them in an electric car. You just don't really need more than one gear.
Right.
But why are they hell-bent on recreate? That's what makes me worry, is they've done this immense piece of styling that looks incredible.
Right.
And yet all the little bits, like, oh, we're going to give it an exhaust pipe sound, and we're going to give it a gearbox that recreates having a 5-speed shift. It's like, well, but why would you do, like, but why? It doesn't make any sense.
So Dodge calls this the Ebrupt transmission, and it's got...
There's like three transmissions on there, and this is the
Ebrupt transmission. Ebrupt. With Ebrupt. Electromechanical shifting, and it delivers distinctive shift points. So I guess that when you floor it in it, you'll get that back and forth motion, I guess. So occasionally, I don't get... This is another, like, vestigial feature that, gas cars that people have, I'm super familiar with gas cars, and they do this, and I guess this is another thing, can I turn this off? I don't even know if I feel like this is something that's not going to make it to the production version, or man, if they do like focus groups. That was a great point you made there, Tom. This is like maybe something that like a focus group might bring up or something, but man, there's no point, right? This is like
Well, again, like the artificial sound, I hope that you can turn off the Ebrupt gearbox if you don't want it. You know what I mean? And if that's the case, then I don't mind them doing this. If give people the choices to select what they want. And if you want it to make a loud, fake noise, I mean, I would just play the radio really loud if I wanted people to hear me coming. But, right. If you want that, okay, tick the box. If you want the, if you don't like the smooth, linear, constant acceleration that an EV provides, which most people agree is better, but, those are the people that have driven both. I think the majority of the people that want that shifting feeling are people that haven't experienced that smooth, acceleration of an EV. If you really want that and Dodge wants to spend the money to make this Ebrupt system, okay, but again, in the vehicle settings, have a little box that you can check, Ebrupt or smooth linear acceleration, and give people the option to choose what they want. It seems like a lot of work for something that people probably don't need, but Dodge, I guess, knows their customers better than we do, and if that's what they're asking them for, okay, give it to them, but let the owners that don't want it just turn it off, and if that's the case, win-win.
Right. Anthony C. says, auto companies already do the shift point thing already. Subaru tunes their CVTs to do the same thing. I haven't driven a CVT in forever. I can't remember how that works. That's great. Have either of you driven a CVT in the last little bit? I don't remember the shift point, but I think actually they're correct.
No, not me.
Okay. Anyway, so that's the Dodge Charger SRT or Daytona SRT. I'm not sure what else I want to say about it. It's hopefully the production version is going to be here with us in 2024, I believe. This one sits on a carbon fiber tub, but I don't imagine they're going to spend that kind of money on the production version, but it's kind of nice. And you can see that in the pictures, the rear seats fold down, so it's a hatch, it's a fastback, so it's got the big hatch in the back, so you have lots of space when you fold those back seats down. Gives it like a utility vehicle in a car shape, so it's pretty cool.
Can I also thank you to your colleagues as well, because your friends Chris Smith and Christopher Bruce, who also do another podcast called Rambling About Cars, which I highly recommend. They do a long segment on this week's show on this. They work for our sister publication, Motor One. And I was saying, it just looks amazing. And they said, yeah, more than one person has compared it to the 1980s Charlie Sheen movie, The Wrath, or Wraith.
Oh, Wraith, yeah.
Which was new to me, by the way. So thank you to your colleagues for putting me onto a brilliant piece of terrible 1980s, American teen movie making. I went and watched it last night, and it was not Charlie Sheen's finest work.
Really?
I can say that. It came before Platoon, of which he significantly improved. It was one. I loved it, by the way. But yeah, this looks exactly like the car in it. And it's great. It's, you know, 40 years ago, it's what the future looked like. And now the future's arrived. And how cool is that?
Right. I'm trying to think. So yeah, I had somebody on Twitter mention that exact car to me. And
it was like an Indy car or NASCAR car.
It was used as a pace car, but it's like a 1980 or 81 concept car from Dodge. And right. But it was a runner though. It like actually worked, and so it got used in this movie. And maybe they'd use it for pace car. I'm not really sure. Indy car possibly at Indy. I'm not really sure. I didn't read the whole wiki. Oh, they have a picture of it up there. That's it.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay.
So I was like, yes, this is a terrible 80s movie, and the car, like this car, is in it, which is very cool.
Right. Right on.
I didn't understand the movie, by the way. I didn't have any clue what was going on. He becomes the car, or the car becomes him, or they merge, or something. But still, go and watch it, because it's brilliantly bad.
Okay. Well, Dodge also launched the Hornet this week in both full combustion and plug-in hybrid flavors. That's based on the Alfa Romeo Tonale, and the gas version is supposed to supposedly go for under $30,000, which is a decent value, which means the plug-in hybrid version could be relatively affordable as well, especially if it can manage to be eligible in whole or in part for the new federal incentive. So basically, the plug-in hybrid is the higher performance version with a serious 5.1 second 0 to 60 if you engage the PowerShot boost mode. It's a second slower without the magic button. So it's got a 15.5 kilowatt hour battery that they say is good for 30 miles. Charging takes 2.5 hours on level 2. No mention of DC fast charging, so it probably can't be fast charged. So I don't know. So I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because, you know, it's a plug-in hybrid. But what do you think of this package, Tom? Plug-in hybrids haven't really been huge here, but we haven't had one in like a spicy compact crossover either.
Yeah, you know, the 15.5 kilowatt hour battery pack is kind of like the minimum that I think is acceptable today for plug-in hybrids, as is the 30-mile driving range. You know, it would have been really nice if they could have stuffed like a 20 or 22 kilowatt hour battery pack in here and got over 40 miles, because then you're really looking at something that you could drive on electric most of the time. You know, that difference between, you know, 28 to 30 miles to 40 to 45 miles makes a big difference, where, you know, a lot of people are not going to fire up the combustion engine on any given normal day of driving. But I think it's fine, you know, and it's good that it does charge on level 2. They didn't put a wimpy level 1 charging system in that, so it can actually be recharged relatively quickly. I'd imagine it's probably just, you know, 6.6 kilowatt onboard charger like they use for the Pacifica plug-in hybrid. And yeah, I think it's a nice little package, and maybe it'll you know, I'm not totally against the plug-in hybrids, because I think they're a good way of getting people into a plug-in car that wouldn't have normally been ready for a full electric. And it gets them used to plugging in every day. And then the next vehicle they get will probably be a BEV, because plugging in will be normalized. They'll like the feel of the vehicle as it's in, when it's in fully electric driving mode, as long as Dodge does a decent job with that and doesn't make it so that, you know, if you just barely touch the accelerator, the ice joins in. You know, it's always nice when they make it so that the vehicle can stay in all EV mode.
It has an EV mode,
but full acceleration.
Yeah, it's got an EV mode. It's got like a regular hybrid, the most efficient balance, like a hybrid mode. And then it also has a, you know, like a ice only mode if you need to save your charge for like a
Yeah, but even in all EV mode, Dom, some of the plug-in hybrids, if you just push on the accelerator just a little bit harder than normal, the ice joins in, you know. And I prefer when you can pretty much do everything in all electric mode until you've exhausted the battery. But, you know, we won't know until we take this thing out for a ride. And, you know, I mean, this is the type of vehicle that I think a lot of families want, small crossover, small SUV type vehicles. And I think it'll work fine. I'd prefer if they made an all electric version of it. They didn't. Having the plug-in hybrid, I guess, the next best thing.
Yeah, I'm like,
and Simon pointed out, I want to point out one of Simon's comments. Matthews except it doesn't, Tom. They don't plug it in. They just take the tax break. Yeah, Simon, that does happen. Some people buy plug-in hybrids and they never plug them in. Sure. But I don't think that's the majority of people. I know a lot of people that have plug-in hybrids. As a matter of fact, a family member that's up here on vacation with us now, I recommended the Volvo plug-in hybrid to them a couple of years ago. And we were just talking about it. And they plug it in all the time. They didn't go fully electric because it was going to be difficult with them daily charging the vehicle because of the way they work. And they don't live in a private residence where they are guaranteed to be able to charge every night. But they've worked out where they can plug it in at work in different places. So a lot of people use plug-in hybrids properly. And I think a lot of times we focus on the smaller percentage of people that don't. They're out there. You're right. There are some people that get plug-in hybrids and never plug them in. And, you know, we can't really focus on that, I don't think.
I find it a little strange that they didn't use the same battery as in the Jeep 4xe. That's like a 17.3 kilowatt hour battery, so a little bit bigger. Anyway, I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. I think it looks a little bit funny because it's like sits super high over the wheels. So I don't know. It looks like it's on stilts to me. It's like not a good look, but people's mileage will vary. It's like I don't get it, but okay. So let's move on though. So getting back to concept reveals, this is Monterey Car Week, and a number of cars are making their first public appearances there. So one of those is the Acura Precision EV concept. So we talked a bit about this one last week after they showed a teaser image, but now we can see like the whole thing. And Brett Evans from Motor One put together a nice little intro video for Inside EVs, which you can see if you're watching us on the YouTube or Twitch or Facebook. Actually, we're looking at a picture right now from the back, and it's very smooth. I don't know, Martin, did you want to make any remarks on this? Did you have a chance to look at this earlier?
Yeah, and this is one that I'm not convinced will arrive looking like it looks. And there's on a sliding scale of the stuff that arrives that we're like, yeah, you know, as Kyle would say, you know, talk to me when I can go drive it. Right. But versus the concept stuff that is called concept, but we know is going to arrive. We've got to talk about another one of those cars in a minute, which is arriving and will look like it looks. Whereas this one, no, I'm sorry. This is a press release during a car week event at Monterey to get some attention. And thanks for your time, Acura. And we'll see you when it's ready.
They say that the Precision EV isn't supposed to represent a specific future model, but shows off the design path that they want to follow. And interesting, also, the Acura last night announced that its first EV will recycle the ZDX name, or ZDX, I forget how you say that in America. But the original was only produced for like three model years, ending in 2013. So they're bringing that name back. It has a very, like a coupe looking crossover, maybe one of the first ones in that vein.
I mean, the great thing about the move to electric vehicles that, you know, our regular viewers have heard us pound that drum many times is you can start again with thinking, well, where do the batteries go? Where does the crash structure go? Where do the crumple zones go? Where do the passengers go? And one of the great things is you don't have to have a massive bonnet out the front of you. So when a car company says, hey, this is our future design language for electric vehicles, we're going to have a massive hood out front. Right. It just makes me think, but okay, I mean, it's all wrong. That's not, I mean, you can put stuff under there. You can put some HVAC stuff on. You can hide bits and bobs under there, but you don't need it. It means the car is going to be bigger than it needs to be. There's less room for the passengers. It's less utility. It's not where the battery should be. They should be underneath you for center of gravity. So you push all the four wheels to all four corners, and you don't have to do like a stubby front. Like, you know, that's you can be a more regular design if you want. But I look at this and I'm like, well, if that's what you think an EV needs to look like, I disagree. Good luck.
Okay. It's a lot of hood.
Now, I agree 100% with what Martin was saying. And I was going to comment on that. The longer the hood, the less spaces for the passengers. You know, you take a look at like what Canoe is doing, where literally the cabin goes from the front bumper to the rear. And that's like taking, you know, EV design to the max. And, you know, because you don't need the giant room in the front for the big combustion engine, you can move the cab forward. You can have more interior space. And, you know, it's kind of like a waste to see that. Even with a big frunk, if this were to have that, you're still losing cargo and passenger space that you could have by moving the cab forward. So, you know, but as Dominic pointed out, this isn't representing, you know, any specific future Acura. It's kind of like, you know, this is the design language we're going in. And, you know, it's hard to be very critical when they're coming out and telling you, don't worry, we're not going to make this. And that's basically what they said. And one thing I will point out, what I think it was Amit pointed out earlier, is that the rear, he said, looks like a BMW iX. And that's the first thing that I saw when I looked at this picture, like the C-pillar back to me on the side view. I was like, wow, that really looks like the iX. And so I'm glad somebody commented on it and agreed with me.
Right on. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to a next. There's the back there. Yeah, it's got, or I see like Jaguar too, like F-type.
Yeah,
those taillights. Anyway, we'll see what happens when they have an actual product that's, you know, that we're gonna. But I felt like it has a very similar stance to like the Cadillac Lyriq, like the same big wheels and same similar proportions. So, you know, very much part of that GM Ultium family. Let's see what happens when they, you know, produce a production version.
Is the event this week well known for like lots of? I don't really know what Monterey is. So is it well known for lots of concepts and? Cause it's like that's what the car makers have been really pushing this week.
Originally more high end stuff, you know. It's like because everyone walks around in fancy jackets and hats, and you know, on Monterey, which is on the coast of California, like south of I forget. it's down. It's on the coast, midway to California. It's nice. Okay. It's a upscale place. Laguna Seca Racetrack is just inland, a few miles from Monterey.
That's good.
But yeah, they have like the Pebble Beach. That's Pebble Beach, and the Cor de Elegant. I don't know. They have lots of fancy names for fancy cars, but more lower scale cars have been kind of creeping in there a little bit over the years. But there's still a lot of like high end and exotic kind of vehicles going on there.
Cool.
So the Lincoln L100 Concept EV also debuted last night, and it's pretty interesting. That is the Lincoln Star Concept. We have
screen.
I put both links in there because we'll talk about that in a bit too. But that's an older version. So yeah, here is the L100 Concept EV. It's super simple at first glance, but I think it's still engaging. We don't get any technical details, but they would be meaningless for this type of concept anyway. So I'm kind of glad they didn't give us all this like fantasy numbers. But we are expecting the first electric Lincoln to be presented later this year and be based on the Ford Mustang Mach-E. So if we're lucky, it will have like bodywork with some of these elements, but perhaps more closely related to the Lincoln Star concept, which Martin had just showed us a moment ago. Which Lincoln showed us that, there you go, the SUV back in April. If you press play on that, it's got a great little light signature, the pattern we're just watching it here now on the screen. It's just like a welcome. Yeah. It looks like a funny nose, the Lincoln in the middle like that, the Lincoln mark. Badge, sure. Mr. Magoo. What do you think of this, Tom? Or we're looking at the SUV version, but if we go back to the L100, what are your thoughts on that? It's pretty futuristic.
Like I do like the welcome lighting. I saw it on the Lyriq in person, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Right.
You know, but as far as the concepts, I mean, that's it looks cool. You know.
Right.
You know, is that the direction that Lincoln is going in? Are they going to make something that looks anything even remotely close to this? Probably not. But concepts are always cool to check out. And that's why we put them up here. But I don't know exactly what's going to be pulled out of this into production vehicles. It's kind of like, taking their design language to extremes.
Right. It's pretty nice. You know what this looks like? And I did this. If you can look at the silhouette, the profile, Martin, if you have that handy.
Yeah, somewhere.
It's very similar to the Cadillac Celestique, actually. It's got a shorter hood. Like the Celestique has like a longer hood, where this is, you know, maximizes the space between the axles. So lots of human room. So this has got a shorter hood and a bit of a longer tail than the Celestique, but it's actually surprisingly kind of similar in shape.
Mm. And that's is that tail longer than the Celestique?
No, yeah, I don't know.
Celestique has a long tail.
It does. No, but if you look at them,
that car just keeps going and going.
It's really close, but I think the Lincoln edges it out just a little bit, and it comes down a little bit lower. Like the angle.
The difference is GM's actually making the Celestique.
Yeah, I've actually it's later in the show, but I can bring it up now because
throw it up now.
It's super interesting to look at.
I didn't know if we were going to get to that. So if you look at
I think it's interesting that they've got to the stage of sticking some camouflage wrap on and going for a little pootle around somewhere.
Right.
That's a great sign. That means they're coming on with it.
If you scroll down to the gallery, you can find a really good side on shot that really kind of emphasizes like that. Right. Right. See?
I know. I mean, just make it bigger. I mean, why not?
This has a longer hood than the Lincoln, but yeah, but it's a very similar shape. I think the Lincoln has more of a rake on the backside of the roof.
Yeah, it does. Look at that.
I love it.
Oh my God.
I love it so much. It's got that huge overhang at the back, and it's ridiculous and bonkers. Right. And I've been saying it all wrong because I've been calling it the Lyric and then the Celestique. I've been calling it, and everyone on my podcast said, no, that's wrong. It's Celestic, Lyric, Celestique. Like, oh, okay. I Frenched it up a little bit. Sorry.
I think I say Celestique too.
I've been saying steak, and it says no. It's stick. Like you throw that makes a stick sense. But Celestique. Okay. Well, that's not so cool. But either way, I mean, okay. Right. They're making it, and it's on the road, and they're moving on with it, and they got the sensors uncovered from the camo, and they're giving it some road testing, which I think is. I'm more excited about seeing them do stuff like this because it means that development path is underway, and it's a bonkers. They say $300,000. It's a bonkers vehicle, but I love that it adds to the conversation, you know. And it's a real car, so that's cool.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'm kind of glad we did. I didn't think we were going to get to this story, but about the Cadillac, you know, being road tested now. But it looks good. Somebody actually mentioned that they kind of like this wrap. They said, "Do you think they'll be offering that?" I think I replied that, you know, they're going to really custom make these cars for people. So if you want that wrap on your car, I think you could probably get it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 300 grand buys whatever you want, I think. So
yeah, basically.
You want that wrap, you can have that.
I think you can do better than that wrap personally, but okay. So good news. If like me, you're a fan of the Polestar 02 electric roadster concept, the Volvo offshoot has confirmed that it will go into production as Polestar 6. So bad news. If you want to buy one, you're going to have to be both patient and rich. It's expected to launch in 2026 only and will cost in the neighborhood of $200,000. So cheaper than a Celestique. but still kind of like out of I could sell my house maybe and buy one, but then I'd have to live in a two-seat. It's a two-plus-two is a two-seater. I can't remember.
I think it's a two-seater. But how cool that this, again, a concept that is very, very close to how they first showed it off is going straight into production. I love this that happens with electric vehicles.
Right. So I don't know if they originally, because there was like some... It sounded to me like they weren't sure if they were going to make this like an actual production vehicle at first because... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a relatively, you know, small production run, I'm sure. They're going to have at least 500 because the first 500 are going to have the option to have like the same unique sky blue exterior, the light leather interior, and these O2 concept 21-inch wheels. So, yeah. So, and basically, this car gets an 800-volt architecture. They don't say... this battery size, I don't think, but over 300 miles of range, 884 horsepower, 663 pound-feet of torque, over 300 miles of range, right? And 0 to 60, 3.2 seconds, which is plenty quick. 155 mile an hour top speed, plenty fast. I don't know. So, Tom, I think they're making this, it sounds like they're making this their halo car, which is kind of stealing thunder from the Polestar 5, which originally started as the beautiful Precept concept, which, you know, I was kind of thinking it was going to be their halo car, but this, with that price tag and that look, man, I love this thing so much. Oh,
yeah, that thing looks awesome. You know, and you know, when you're up in the stratosphere of $200,000, whether it's a two seat or four seat, it doesn't really matter because it's going to be someone's, you know, third or fourth car.
Yeah,
it's not going to be their daily driver probably. Well, maybe they'll daily drive it, but they've also have a bunch of other vehicles in the stable. Styling is awesome. I think that looks really, really nice. So, yeah, it's great. It's great that we're getting these crazy expensive sports cars. The Cadillac Celestiques. How do you say it again, Martin?
I was told Celestic.
All right. Well, you know, for $300,000, I'll call it what I want. And that's not me talking. One of our commenters said that, so I can't take credit for that. Yeah, I mean, it's great that we're getting EVs in all of these, you know, crazy, even small, low volume use cases. And, you know, that's when we know that they're really getting mainstream now. So, I mean, that's not something that many of our followers or any of us are going to buy, but it looks fantastic. It's a shame they couldn't make a lower cost version of this, you know, because what a sexy car that is. And I know so many friends of mine have been commenting for years, like, I can't wait till I can get a convertible electric vehicle, cool convertible electric vehicle, particularly my friends that live out in California, where convertibles are really more of a thing than the rest of the country, at least in the northern states where I live. Also, they're not really a big thing because they kind of stink in the winter. But if you're in a mild climate area, convertibles are a way of life. And we haven't had any choices for convertible EVs. I think like the Smart Electric Drive was the only convertible EV for a long time. But now, you know, we're going to start to get some options. And that's why we know EVs are going mainstream, when we're getting all these, you know, even low volume, small specialty niche cars in electric.
Right on. Yeah. Anything you want to say about the Polestar before we move on, Martin?
No. Okay.
All right. So, the DeLorean Alpha 5 also made its public debut at Pebble Beach. So, not a whole lot to talk about here. The company's, you know, it's a new company, and it still remains to be seen whether they can actually build this, but they did build, you know, the first prototype, and it looks, I don't know, I think it looks pretty good, actually. I saw some video of it rolling across the lawn there at Pebble Beach last night. So this, they say this could go to 60 miles an hour in about 3 seconds, reach 155 flat out. It's an all-wheel drive, four-seater with the crazy gull-wing doors. And it has a stated range of 300 miles using a 100 kilowatt-hour battery. And this is actually... And DeLorean actually is being, this is news, they're being sued by Karma. So there's like the CEO of DeLorean and three of the other people, high-end executives, were with Karma actually originally. Then they left and created their own company. And I guess the Karma people are not happy about that. And so they're suing them. But yeah, like it's not hard enough already to build a car company, but yeah.
It wouldn't be DeLorean unless there was some legal drama flying around somewhere that upholds the original idea of the company. So yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's quite a story, that the original DeLorean story. But I don't know if we're going to. There's not really a whole lot to say about this. I don't know, Tom, you have anything to say about this?
I need to see more from DeLorean before I take them serious. To me, it's just you know. At this point, they're so far from being able to produce something. Let's get a little bit down the road before we start spending a lot of oxygen on them.
Sure.
And I'm from a former DeLorean. I had a DeLorean for a while, so I love the brand. Back in the 80s, there was nothing cooler than to drive than a DeLorean. I mean, it was better than pulling up in a Ferrari or Lamborghini. Like, everyone just flocked around that every time I pulled up to wherever I was going. So I didn't know it was my uncle's, but my uncle, you know, got sick of it after driving it for like 6 months because it was tough to get in and out of. And he was kind of a bigger guy. So when I got my driver's license, it was just sitting in his driveway. And he called me up on my birthday, my 17th birthday. And he was like, hey, why don't you come over and get the DeLorean? And I thought he was going to give it to me for a couple of hours. And I'm like, okay, I'll be back by 8 o'clock. He's like, nah, just take it until I need it back. And he like never called me to take it back. So I just kept it for a few months at least.
Right on. It was almost as fast as a Chevette too, right?
Yeah, it was 0 to 60 in like 11 seconds or something. But that wasn't the point of it. It was just cool. I mean, it was just pulling up when those doors opened up. Like I said, whenever, you know, when you're a teenager and you're, you know,
and it was the '80s, we didn't have stuff like this
door or whatever, you know, at 11 o'clock at night or the movie theater or whatever, when you pulled up and opened those windows, everything stopped. Like, you know, and that's all you care about when you're 18 is who's looking at me, you know? And, it was cool. It was a really fun car to drive around in.
Cicero Holmes say that was my uncle Doc Brown. Right on. All right. So this is a kind of an interesting story. Mahindra's Inglo EV platform. So Mahindra is previewing 5 new electric SUVs, and they're using part of the Volkswagen MEB platform with this. So, yeah, India's been in, you know, relatively slow, I think, to get into EVs. They don't have like the infrastructure, and they haven't put the, you know, the money into development like China has, but they're starting to come around. Mahindra is one of the big domestic brands, and you have to kind of basically be a domestic brand to sell successfully there, really. I mean, I think they have a few other brands you can buy there, of course, but it's like Tesla's been, I think, trying to get in there for a while. And they really like to have parts sourced from India and built in India. So there are barriers to trade there for international companies. But Mahindra, which is a huge company, they launched 2 different brands of electric vehicles this week. They got the BE brand and the XUV brand. And so these are created specifically for Mahindra's future electric portfolio. The 2 brands will offer 5 models at first. The XUV is like the XUV.E8, XUV.E9. There's a BE.05, BE.07, and BE.09. So there's 2 brands, but it sounds like basically the same brand with a different, slightly different, I don't know, letters. So the first 4 of these are going to be launched between 2024 and 2026. They're going with LFP batteries, lithium iron phosphate batteries, which are more affordable. They're going to be in 60 kilowatt hours and 80 kilowatt hour configurations. DC fast charging will have a peak rate of 175 kilowatts. Excuse me, I'm tripping over myself here. So that'll give you a charging time of 80% and under 30 minutes, which is reasonable. I don't know, Tom, but we don't really spend a whole lot of time on this because it's kind of brand new. And these are physical things, right? These aren't just... No, maybe these are just computer-generated images.
That's what I think that they are. Yeah, and I mean, this is one of the stories I really didn't read much this week.
Sure, but
they are. These are all MEB based, right?
Well, they said they're going to use components using MEB EV components. So I'm not sure if it's going to, you know, how much of the MEB that they're going to use. They're going to use the batteries and the motors and inverters and things, and then make their own. I don't know if the metal parts, like the frame structure, is going to be there.
Yeah, I was hoping that they were just, you know, going to be using MEV platforms, and then that, you know, gave me confidence that these would be, you know, sophisticated electric vehicles, and they would be, you know, good in comparison to what else is available out there. So I don't know. We need to learn more about that. You know, I mean, this is kind of their initial press release on this and nothing produced, but it's a huge company. They have resources to get into the game big and quickly. And I like the idea with them partnering with Volkswagen to provide, you know, even if it's just components, that gives me more confidence that there'll be, you know, quality products.
Pete Bremy sums it up pretty nicely, but the styling, he says, woof. I think with the Indian cars, I think they need to be like more narrow than what we're used to seeing in North America. Plus higher. They like a lot of ground clearance because they have rough roads to deal with, I guess. And so Indian car styling, I've noticed like domestic vehicles tend to look a little bit, you know, narrow and high and not quite the aesthetic that we're used to here, I think. Mm. Anyway, those are just my thoughts. So other news, I know, Rimac Navarre is in the news, and I know Tom loves it when I bring them up, so I have to bring them up. But so they've had this one car in the U.S., like I think it's 000. It's like their demonstration car. And so it's kind of pre-production, but it's basically the production car. But it was rear-ended. It's been in L.A., and some journalists have been in it. Not me, or Kyle. I was hoping he'd be with us today so we could talk about it, because I have a feeling he has a little bit more inside info on what happened here. But basically, it was looks like it was driving along the skyline, road out there in California. It's very popular with motorcycles and sports cars, and someone rear-ended the $2 million Rimac Navarre car with their motorcycle, and they look like they're not, you know, they got up, they walked around, so they don't look like they're hurt too bad. They could have more gear on, but that's an expensive crash. Interesting, this little screenshot, they also got like a Porsche Taycan in this shot. I don't know,
Kyle's probably in the Taycan.
Right. he mentioned this, like they did have, I don't know if he mentioned this last week or the week before, but he did mention they had this press car here, or maybe that was a private conversation, I'm not sure. And you know, because everyone wants to get in this thing, right? It's like the Nico picked up his version. I'm not sure if we can play that on our without getting a YouTube strike.
It came from TikTok originally, then went to Twitter, and someone's uploaded it to YouTube. So if someone's copywriting it, then I don't think they were the original person, but
right. And that was that was Miroslav. That's in the video there with, that's the tester and development driver for Remats. Yeah.
I want to see how much that guy's insurance goes up with on the motorcycle.
One other thing about this Rimac story, it's not actually about this, but Rimac also, Mate, the head of Rimac, shared the spec with some photos on his Facebook page. Do you have that link there, Martin?
Yeah.
It's in purple on the show notes. He shared some pictures of the first one coming to the U.S. So this is serial number 002, I understand, and it's coming to the U.S., and it looks like this. I think they have a little M in front of the URL. Did I take off the M? Okay, I took it off.
I don't have a Facebook. I don't have a Facebook, so I can't get into it. Oh. But I'm one of those people. But yeah, we'll find the pictures. Yeah, I'll try.
So that's why we're not Facebook friends. I thought you just, you know, didn't like me.
It's just, you know, I mean, Facebook was kind of good like 15 years ago, maybe, but let me see if I can find a picture from the internet. There we go. 002. That's what Marte posted.
Okay.
So there you go. Now, the interesting thing about it, right, is that the car that got hit by the bike is, it's not like it can be repaired in the US. So there would be no reason to have any single spares of a vehicle in the US. They could ship something, I guess, on the plane that brought it over, the one that got hit by the bike. But there was going to be some press drives. They've all been cancelled now. Like we say, we think possibly, you know, Carl was hoping he might be able to get some time in it. But they've all been cancelled now, and that car it won't get fixed in the US. That will be on a plane as cargo back to Croatia, where they've got the specialist tools and equipment, and you know, because that was a big old dent on the back, and they'll want to check it all out. And I mean, it might just be a scuff, but even if it's a scuff, what are you gonna put a rear bumper on a plane over to the US and try and get it fit? No, I think the car goes back home now for a few weeks, and man, that's put a dent in their plans as well as a dent in the car. But yeah, that's not a call to the insurance company that you want to make. I mean, hitting an expensive car is bad, but that is literally the only one in the world in the US right now.
Right. Well, this one's on its way. This one's on its way.
That's a custom car, so that's not going to be driven around. No. Like, that's not going to be driven around by the test drivers or, you know, offered to journalists to do some either ride-alongs or accompany drives, for instance. So, I mean, man, that's...
Spoiler alert, it's Kyle's car. Just kidding. Kidding.
That's a real shame. But yeah, it just goes to show, like they're not working with big numbers. They haven't got a spare one. They go, oh, well, let the press drive another one or show. There was going to be another car show next week as well, but I don't imagine it will be. That'll be on a plane already, I imagine, as cargo back to Croatia. So I think anyway.
I wouldn't be surprised.
If it's all cosmetic, it's possible they could fix it here. They could fly all the parts over. Sure. Fly their engineers over, and then you find a local shop that or super high end shop that lets them, you know, use the bays and it's possible. If it's all, it's a good chance it's all cosmetic too, you know, with just the motorcycle hitting the back. But you know, we don't know at this point. I mean, as Martin said, the biggest problem is so many people were lined up to drive this thing, and Rimac wanted them to do that because they wanted the additional press. So they're going to do what they can to get this thing back on the road as quickly as possible. I would believe.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great. And it didn't look like it's too bad. So I guess we'll find out. But, so Martin,
yeah,
I hear you like pickup trucks.
We need pickup trucks over here, by the way.
Well, you're getting one.
We are getting one. It's the Maxus, which is in Australia and New Zealand, what's it sold as, an LDV? Anyway, you carry on. I'll let you introduce it.
No, I was just going to say the Maxus T90 EV is the UK's first electric pickup truck that's coming. It starts at £49,950, which I don't know. To me, it sounds like a lot. It's I don't know. I can't really tell what size this is. That's about $60,000 US, which is, you know, a fair amount of money. And what we have is like an 88.5 kilowatt hour battery. 150 kilowatts of power, 200 horsepower on the rear axle, so it's only rear wheel drive. Range is claimed to be 220 miles on the WLTP cycle, charging 20 to 80% in around 45 minutes. Peak charging is 80 kilowatts, so those aren't you know, mind blowing specs for a $60,000 truck. Mid-sized truck. I don't know. What's your impression? This is for your market, Martin. So maybe give us a quick thumbs up or down or something.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't got electric trucks yet. So this is good. And Maxus is a known name here.
Is it?
Yeah, it's SAIC. And so, okay. But I think that they could have gone with, I think it's the LDV name that is more well-known here that they also own. Somebody in the comments will remind me in Australia and New Zealand what this is sold as. That one has plastic around the bumpers and a different grill, but it's the same vehicle. And it's Chinese, obviously. But yeah, maybe for working vehicles, farm vehicles, you're taking a picture in front of a livestock center or some sort of, you know, cow auction. And that's probably exactly the kind of buyer that wants a pickup truck. It's not four-wheel drive, so you know, that limits what it is. And of course, that 49,000 is without VAT. It's a working vehicle, so without VAT, which we pay 20%. So you want to add another chunk of money onto that. But I can't think of anything else I want to say about that. No. But the first pickup truck here, we need one, and it'll serve a purpose.
It's a very shouty grill. People will know that where you're driving when they see you coming towards you.
It's the T60 Max Ute, says John O'D. Let me have a look. Let me Google that. And because when I've seen this vehicle before, it actually looks better as an LDV.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. I looked at
the specs. The towing seemed pretty poor for a pickup truck.
But was it like
just a little over 3,000 pounds?
Right. Yeah. It was. Yeah,
and that's that's really bad for a pickup truck.
It's quite modest. Like we said, it's like only rear-wheel drive, and it's like a 150 kilowatt motor on the back of that. So it's
two-wheel drive.
That's what it looks like. That's the same vehicle. It looks so much better.
So it's not the biggest of utility. I think, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? If you're on a farm, if you're on a working vehicle, and you're not driving a Land Rover, and something four-wheel drive, then you know. It's going to be a difficult market to enter. Maybe working vehicles, but over here, van culture is so much bigger than truck culture. So, a new van would be a good, decent van with 80, 100 kilowatt hour battery would be a way bigger story than a pickup truck.
Well, speaking of farmers, Foxconn is going to build the Monarch electric tractor at the Ohio plant from Q1 of 2023. So that's soon, next January. We're going to have electric tractors being built at the Lordstown plant that Foxconn built up. So not the, I forget what the name of the Lordstown pickup truck was again, but it's not going to be, it looks like tractors are going to be the first thing built there, electric tractors. And it's I don't have a lot of info on this thing exactly, but I just thought it would be worth bringing up because I like the idea of electric tractors a lot. It has a great runtime. I think it was like 10 hours or something. I was watching a video on it. And they have some autonomous features as well, because they have some footage of it just doing its thing, you know, with no driver behind the wheel. So that's kind of cool. And I just wanted to mention that. But let's talk a bit about what we've been driving this week. Tom, so Kyle's not with us. He's had quite a week. And hopefully he'll be back to tell us about it next week. But he's got some Model S plaid repairs to deal with.
Well, we can say the Model S plaid was crashed.
So, right.
Last time I looked, his video had about 60,000 views. I think everyone knows now. He lent the Model S plaid to Jordan, and Jordan crashed it. So.
And they have there's a great story on Out of Spec Reviews with Jordan, Jordan's mea culpa, with some footage of what's happened. Basically, he put it in track mode, which is a bad idea, on the street, and just gave a little blip in a turn, and it swung around, and didn't catch it, and man, it's repairable. There's no body damage, but definitely some suspension broken and wheels broken. So we'll hear about it next week, I guess. Hopefully Kyle can join us.
Such a powerful, such a fast vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be on your game constantly when you're driving it.
It looks like it's got four-wheel steering.
Yeah.
And that's the rear wheel. And it's the whole thing's just pushed, because he spun it round 180 degrees and hit a curb. And so he hit the curb. There's a side impact, so has the axle pushed into them, you know, that's a horrible force to be putting on an EV. That sideways force, so you spun it, hit the curb, and then has that pushed through and done some damage to the motor or the gearbox. Both are like that, like both wheels are wobbly, so
Well, hopefully the suspension broke, so hopefully that like really absorbs like the kinetic energy and kept it from hitting the motors and things up farther up the line. I don't know. I hope, at least.
And also, Tom, you said this before, when you drove the plaid for the first time, you know, you have got a lot of experience of driving high performance cars. So does Kyle. Because Kyle's driven on track before. But also, so like Jordan is not new to driving electric cars. You know, Jordan's worked with Kyle on his channel, you know, for a long time now, and drives all sorts of EVs. And so, track mode, blip the throttle. He didn't blame the yoke, but he also says that it's like it's still a bit of a blur in that moment, that sort of half second of the car spinning around, it all sort of has a little bit disappeared. I mean, they put in the video, I recommend all my viewers go and watch this. In the video, they show the cameras, but not the, I don't think they show the interior camera, which is in fairness to Jordan probably, and maybe even insurance reasons or whatever. But I don't know where his hands were on the yoke at what time. He says that the yoke wasn't the reason he crashed it, but he doesn't know if it had a circular wheel, whether he would have naturally gone to grab it and correct. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's difficult. I'm looking at, when I watched the footage, I was looking at it in my head. I'm thinking, okay, I'm holding the wheel, the back and starts to step out. Like, I grew up in driving snowmobiles, and I'm used to cars in the snow. I'm used to the back end stepping out. So it's like automatic. As soon as that begins to happen, you know, you just kind of steer towards it. So I'm not sure, you know, if it, so you steer into it, and if you happen not to catch it, or it swings back the other way, you catch it, but it swings back hard the other way, then you need to, then that's when it, the ground steering wheel kind of comes in handy. But like the initial thing, yeah, I don't know if a round steering wheel would have made any difference at all. But
yeah, I mean, but, what I only thing I have to say about it is that what Martin in, you know, indicated a little bit when I first drove it, my initial impression, and I said this on the show, that there's going to be a lot of these things being crashed,
right?
Because it is so incredibly powerful. And then you have the combination of the yoke, which you're kind of unfamiliar with, and you have milliseconds to react, you know, when something's going wrong. And also the fact that the brakes are not up to standard for what they should be for a car that powerful. And even people that have experience driving the cars, it's just so powerful. If you're really getting on it and you're, you know, playing around, it, things go bad so quickly. And, you know, a couple of times it broke loose on me, and I was like, all right, I'm not going to crash this thing. And I just did my normal range test and so forth. But it's the most powerful vehicle I've ever driven. And for pretty much everyone that gets behind the wheel, except for professional drivers, it's the most powerful vehicle they've ever driven. And things go bad quickly.
Yeah. Well, just to sum it up, Kyle's got a great video detailing his misadventures, vehicular misadventures this week. Everything's gone wrong, man. Someone stole his Suburban and brought it back because it sucks so bad.
I love that he got inside his truck and realized there was cigarette ash everywhere and thought, right, this isn't right. Someone stole his truck, and it was so bad they brought it back, and they're like, no, nah, we're just gonna take it for a joyride. I mean, they nicked the Martian wheels, these Tesla wheels,
tires, the wheels out of the back.
I mean, they took, because he had them in the back, I think, covered as well. Like, he wasn't inviting.
It's just been like it's just been a week for him. Like, his Land Rover, the coolant thing exploded, like came out hot coolant out of the vents, like in the interior. Like, he just brought it back from getting, you know, spending like thousands of dollars getting it fixed and
that's
road
not
ready.
Unusual. That thing breaks every time he drives it. Man. So there's nothing unusual there.
You know, designing it. You know, an old Range Rover's going to do that. But I'm trying to think what we've talked about on the show for our viewers and listeners, and what we haven't, because we talk off air as well. He'd mentioned that Alyssa had reversed the Rivian
R1T
into a fence.
Yes.
But it's paint damage. So that's one that I think, although the Rivian has got to go back to them to have some things worked on, she didn't crash his Rivian. It was just a kind of, it was a scrape. It was cosmetic. There's no problems with his Rivian. And his Sprinter wouldn't start. Because he hadn't driven his Sprinter in so long that he reckons the diesel had drained out of the fuel lines.
Right.
So, I'm not surprised he's not. We can't find him this morning, this afternoon, my time, and I'm not surprised that he's had a bad week. He's had a bad week.
But hopefully it'll get better. But so Tom, let's hear about your vehicle though. You've got this. I want to hear about your F-150 Lightning. If any updates, but I understand it's popular where you are. But the Porsche Taycan range test. So you did a Porsche Taycan range test last week. I don't know.
Yeah. So the video went up last week. I actually did this a couple of weeks ago. If you remember, Porsche announced that they were doing updates. Software updates for all of the existing Taycans, all 75,000 that are out there worldwide. And they're going to, there's some pretty dramatic improvements that they're making. And we have a full article up on Inside of Vs. We're not going to go over all that. But one of the things that this software update was supposed to do was make the cars more efficient and increase their driving range. And it's going to be standard on all 2023 Taycans. As soon as this broke, I reached out to Porsche and said, look, if the range is going to be better, we need to do a range test. And they agreed to let me do it. The only thing is I had to go down to Georgia and do it at Porsche headquarters. That picture there is me charging on the Porsche's DC fast chargers at Porsche North America headquarters in Georgia. So I went down, and it was literally either the first car or the second car that got the software update in the US. And I was the first person outside of Porsche to drive it. So I did the range test, and we did a rear wheel drive base Taycan. Well, that's what they provided for me. But, and that's me talking to Calvin Kim, Porsche Taycan product communication manager for Porsche North America. And to talk about what happened with the software update. The only problem is, while the rear wheel drive version does have efficiency improvements and will have a longer driving range, there's a bigger improvement for the all wheel drive Taycans, because part of this software update, when the vehicle's in range or normal driving mode, you're on the highway, the front engine, or the front motor, is going to be de-energized and decoupled. There's still a physical connection, but that what they're doing basically is taking it out of the equation, so there's no efficiency losses from it. So from what I was what's explained to me, the all-wheel drive versions are going to see a greater improvement in efficiency and driving range. But they only had the rear-wheel drive version, so we did that. You can see Martin pulled up. Now, I finished up with almost 306 miles driven. Now, Kyle and I both have done range tests on this same vehicle, the rear-wheel drive base Taycan. Kyle went 293 miles. I went 297 miles. This was last year on the old software. Now, we went 306 miles. Not a lot further, but what I will say is, the conditions that I had to drive this in was worse than the conditions that both Kyle and I drove the vehicle in. Number one, the topography of the terrain I was on was not as flat as what we like to do. I was climbing 400 or 500 feet inclines, then going down, climbing up again. That's not ideal for range. So I would fully expect, and also it was raining when I started the range test. It was not raining hard. It was drizzling for a little while. So I would fully believe that if I took this thing on my course here in New Jersey, which is flat and in good driving conditions, like when I did the range test, I probably would have ended up with somewhere around 315, possibly as close as 320. So yeah, there's definitely a range improvement with this new software and efficiency. That's me at the end when I was charging up and just going over the what went on and efficiency. We ended up with 3.66 miles per kilowatt hour, which, you know, is pretty good for doing such a high performance sports car. You know, 3.66 miles per kilowatt hour is pretty good. It's better than what we get on some little economy hatchbacks. So they did a nice job.
Awesome.
I see one thing. I wonder if Tom appreciated having the interview in an underground parking lot. Would have been nice to have it above ground. It would have been, but it was raining, and that's where the car was set up for me, and it was really the only place we could do it. The acoustics was terrible. The lighting was terrible, but it was either that or not interview Calvin before I take off. You know, I flew down. I was literally there for, a couple of hours and started the range test and then got on a plane immediately afterwards. So this wasn't something that I had a couple of days to plot everything out. That's the parking garage at underneath Porsche's headquarters. That was the only place I could set up. I know, as I said, the acoustics and the lighting wasn't great, but that's really the best we could do at that time.
A lot of comments about the color. Sorry.
Yeah. The upgrade, the software upgrade, which, of course, your Taycan has to go back to Porsche to be done. My friend Richard Simons, and you guys have met him from Kyle's Media Day from RSEV. Got a great YouTube channel as well, by the way. He sells, buys and sells EVs over here. Quite close to where I live. He's got two Taycans now. He said his Taycan, his own one for a year, and he's got he loves them. But he went back to have the software upgrade recently, and he forgot to put the manual. They said put the manual in the car so we can destroy it. The old manual, give you a new paper manual, and this thing is like it's a wedge. Paper manuals, who would have thought? And he forgot, and Porsche drove all the way to his house and wouldn't leave until they had the old paper manual and gave him the new paper, and then they destroy it as some sort of proof to Porsche headquarters that they've done the update on that car. But how funny. I don't know, people are going to eBay them or something, or like collector's items or memorabilia. I don't know, but they don't want these old owner's manuals in circulation anywhere, to the point of they came to him and like, that's give crazy. give us the book. But that's the instruction they have. So it's not like they were singling him out. He's got a great video on this on YouTube. So check out RSEV. And he goes through all the color icons and stuff like that. And so he's been a personal Tycon owner. That's his daily driver for the last 12 months. And I talked to him in the week and I said, because he told me he was selling it 6 months ago. So when he told me he made a new video of the upgrade, like, you sold that car. And he said he can't bring himself to sell it. He loves it too much and he knows it's flawed. And because he also owns Teslas of all shapes and sizes, and he's sold hundreds of them over the years. And he's like, yeah, I know the software is more clunky. I know it's more laggy. Like, it's not. And the fact that you have to go back to the dealer to have a software update to then enable over the, it doesn't compare. It's such a great vehicle, piece of engineering. He can't bring him. He says nothing eats up the miles better for him, and he loves Teslas than a Tycon. So I don't know. I don't know when he says he's going to sell it, but I don't know if he will.
I kind of feel the same way. You know, I've driven every electric vehicle that's out there, and honestly, if you said that you can only have one car, and you know, price doesn't matter, I might take a Tycon as my daily driver, as my, you know, everyday vehicle over every other EV that's available. I absolutely love them. I mean, I'd probably take the Cross Turismo over the regular Tycon, only because you get everything plus more utility, and you really don't sacrifice anything with the Cross Turismo. So, but you know, one thing I will mention about the software updates, and as Martin pointed out, yes, you do have to bring it to the dealership, but part of this software update is also making future updates will be more types of future updates will be available over the air as part of this software update. So hopefully, you know, in the future, Porsche is moving towards allowing more things to be done over the air. And this software update is supposed to be part of that. So, it's kind of, you know, not very convenient having to bring the vehicle in for a software update, especially these days where you can do so much over the air and Tesla does everything over the air. But evidently Porsche understands that, and this update is going to allow more things to be updated in the future over the air.
Right on. So, Tom, tell us how's it going with your Ford F-150 Lightning truck now? So you're on vacation with it, and I guess it's turning some heads there. Any issues at all?
So no issues. I actually did about a 600-mile trip to get here. It's not that far from my house, but earlier in the week I had to go way out in Connecticut because I had to do dealer training. I had two Kia dealerships that were under contract to train on basically EVs 101, how to sell EVs. So that was almost 200 miles in one direction. Then I had to cross back up through Massachusetts and New York State to where I am now. So, my first long road trip, and went off without a hitch. Just had to stop once for about 45 minutes. There was a Denny's on right on the highway that had an Electrify America DC fast charge station. So I plugged in at like 10%, I think, state of charge. And we got something to eat, came out about maybe 55 minutes. It was a little more than 45 minutes. And I was already up over 90%. So 10 to 93%, I think, in like 55 minutes, something like that, which is, you know, a typical stop if you're going to grab something to eat, which was fine. And then I got up here, and there's the Welcome Center in right by Wellesley Island, the Tourism Welcome. They have a free 50 kilowatt DC fast charger. And so I plugged in, fully charged it up for free. And now I'm going to head up to Canada today. One of the things that still is amazing to me is how many people stop me to talk to me about the truck. I'm surprised people know what it is, because it just looks like a black F-150. Yes, the headlight's different, the taillight's a little different, but I didn't think that many people would notice that. But everywhere I go, I get stopped and people ask me how much I like it. Last night when we were out to dinner, when we came out to the parking lot, there was somebody waiting next to the car to talk to me. I don't know how long they were waiting there, but they wouldn't leave until I came out. and just want to ask me a million questions about it. And they want to know how could they get one. And they've been reading things about it. So it's really impresses me how many people are interested in the truck. And it's been fantastic. I actually have a video coming up on my channel with the article embedded at Inside of East in 5 minutes from now at 11 a.m. Eastern's going to come up. I did a deep dive in charging costs, and I almost didn't do it once I started. Once I started going down that rabbit hole, I wanted to make a video on how much will it cost to charge the F-150 lane, because a lot of people are asking me, well, Tom, how much are you going to save over a gas light F-150 over, say, 5 years or 10 years or whatever? That's something that I've gotten a lot of people asking me. So I said, okay, I'll do a deep dive video on this. And I didn't want to just do my cost to charge at home, which is how I charge it and how most people will charge their Lightnings and all their EVs. But I wanted to also compare the different charging networks: ChargePoint, Electrify America, EVgo, Blink, some of the big networks around here. But then I realized once I started doing it, the rabbit hole just got deeper and deeper, because they have different pricing for level two. They have different pricing for DC fast. Then there's three different pricing plans, you know, the pay as you go, plus, you know, member. And then there's different pricing depending on the state you live in. Some states are pay by minute. Some states are pay by kilowatt hour. And it's crazy. So I started putting all these prices together on a spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet was getting longer and longer. And I'm like, this video is going to be 3 hours. So I kind of cut it, crunched it down to the main Blink, EVgo, Electrify America, and did the main pricing that you would have, and showed people how to look up the pricing where they live on their state if it's not included. And then at the end of the video, I compare the cost for 100,000 miles to drive if you charged exclusively at home in my state, New Jersey, which is the national average for electricity. I pay 15 cents a kilowatt hour. Then I compared Alaska, Hawaii, which is the highest cost of electricity in the country. And then I also used North Dakota, which, surprisingly, I didn't realize this, they have the least expensive electricity in the country. 10 cents per kilowatt hour is their average cost. And then I compared it to charging exclusively on Electrify America, EVgo, Blink. And then I compared it to the F-150 hybrid that has the best gas mileage, the all-wheel drive version, which is 24 miles per gallon, and also a Ford F-150 Raptor, which, in my opinion, is the best direct comparison to the Lightning, because performance-wise, that's what the Lightning is. It's, you know, you can't compare the performance of it to a hybrid F-150 V6. Right. You know, you shouldn't be, at least. And if it would cost, really just quick, me charging at home, and also I have solar electric. I explained that a little, but I acted as though I didn't have it because I paid pretty much nothing for my electricity. But if I didn't have the solar array, it would cost me $6,200 to power the Lightning for 100,000 miles, $6,200. The Raptor would cost $26,666 with gasoline at its current price of $4 per gallon. Right. But then I said, well, it probably won't stay this high that long. So right. I also added if it was $3 a gallon average price. I mean, there were so many different ways I could have taken this. I had to right. I had to try to limit the amount because it would have just taken forever. And then it was, I think, $20,000. So, you know, it could be as much as a $20,000 savings compared to fueling a Lightning compared to a Raptor over 100,000 miles. I thought that was interesting. So that video actually is going to go live in 1 minute.
Oh, sweet.
This podcast, if you guys are interested, check out that video.
I haven't got enough of Tom yet, so I'm gonna tune in.
I also thought, Tom, you put a survey up a poll up a couple of days ago on Twitter, and you've got a pretty half decent following. So it had, you know, over 1,000 people respond to it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, about the biggest impediment.
Yeah, like, what's the biggest thing holding back EV adoption? 1,061 votes, which is like a really nice sample size. And yeah, it's the infrastructure again that you know, you don't know who answered this. You know, probably people that are following Tom are of a certain interest group, but it can get retweeted, and it did get retweeted far and wide. So you don't know who's answering it. So always caution with these things. But yep, really interesting. If it's the cost, the charging, the availability, or the range, it was just out front charging again. So it's an issue that kind of dominates the conversation and is still on people's minds, clearly.
Right. Yeah, and range came in last. I think if I would have done this this survey 6-7 years ago, range would have probably been number one. Might have been initial EV cost, but range is slowly fading away, being the problem. You know, people are realizing you can get by with less range as long as there's a good charging network out there, a good public infrastructure. So, and it would have been awesome if there was a way, Martin, for me to have two polls. One, if you own an EV, vote in this poll. Two, if you don't own an EV, vote in this poll with the same question. But and I actually thought about doing that and running two polls, but then I said, people won't adhere to the rules. You know, they'll just vote whichever one they see first. So I don't think it was worth doing that. But it's interesting.
Yeah. Take it for what it is, but I think it's interesting, and it's something that I don't even consider. And I think that the mainstream media, which is always used as almost a little bit derogatory term these days, I don't mean that. I just mean kind of non-EV, or just the next stage of the adoption curve. People talk about range anxiety because they either think that they should, or they've heard it and think that it's like that. You know, if they'll use it and sound clever, or I don't know, but I never ever use that phrase. On my podcast with people I know, because if you're driving through an area with no petrol stations and you've got 1 liter of petrol left, then you're going to have range anxiety. So I get it's been different with electric cars because there are fewer chargers than petrol stations, if you go back 10 years. So I'm not saying it's a myth, I'm just saying I don't think it's a thing anymore, depending on how you drive a vehicle. I don't like the phrase range anxiety, but it's good to see people also agreeing and saying, well, actually it's not the number one thing. It might be second, third, fourth on their list, but you don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, comment. John 209 commented, EVs are not cheaper to fuel unless you charge at home. And in many instances, you're correct, John, but not in all. So take a look at my video. I think you'll be surprised at the end when I compare how much it costs to charge, the different ways you can charge on different networks. Some of the ways are much less expensive, and some of the ways actually are more expensive. I mean, there were, depending on, that's the video there. Depending on where you charge, it actually could cost more than gas.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's some crazy electricity prices out there, man. I'm good where I am, but over 30 cents, above 30 cents, some places for a kilowatt hour. That's is like crazy.
Oh yeah. Blink's 42 cents.
I mean, just like regular domestic,
Well, Hawaii is 40 cents. The average cost is 40 cents in Hawaii statewide. But then I also mentioned in the video that you can use time of use plans. So it becomes impossible. Like I said, there's so many rabbit holes I could have went down. Then I did some research on the time of use plans in California. I was going to mention those and do a whole separate thing on that. But like I said, this would have just went on forever. And that's what's difficult, because it's hard to put your finger on the cost. Everybody knows exactly what gas costs. Okay, it's $4 a gallon right now. It was $5 a gallon 6 months ago. It'll probably be $3 a gallon 6 months from now. And it's easy for people to understand. But with EVs, charging can dramatically, look at the difference between what I'm paying at home, $6,200, and what it would cost me to have the same 100,000 miles in Hawaii, $16,000. So, and then look at North Dakota, $4,000 to power your truck to drive it 100,000 miles. So, and then you start looking at time of use plans, and it just throws a monkey wrench into everything. So this video doesn't tell you everything, but you should be able to take the information I provide and then, find exactly what it would cost you where you live in different, under different conditions and time of use plans and so forth.
Right. Well, thanks for that. I think we should probably wrap it up. We're up against the 1.5 hours or so. I was going to try to be a little tighter this week, but whoops.
only three of us this week, and we still went an hour and a half. Sorry. Right. Sorry, dear listener.
Yeah.
Slash viewer. Sorry.
Yeah, and there's so many news stories. There's so many things we didn't even talk about yet. Like Tesla's supercharger network had a little on their app. I think they had a little thing about non-Teslas. I just got a text from Kyle. Says, "Sorry, I did not realize it was Friday," which is understandable. He's going full tilt. So he works hard and constantly, pumping out videos, so you lose track of the days. Let's wrap this up. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. You can run over to Inside EVs and check out Tom's latest video. It's just dropped. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor, even when he's not here, is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Have a great week, and we'll see you all again next time. Ciao.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.